All right, we have the pleasure to introduce Brian Hamilton, who will be speaking on the Pope's Corona Theorem and Assistance Formula.
Thanks, Greg. So, of course, I'd like to thank the organizers for the invitation. It's always a pleasure to come to Fields and to have it so close to where I grew up as a mathematician. It's really been an invaluable resource for me. So I should mention that most of the work I talk about today is joint with Mrinal Ragapathy, and he's at the Naval Academy. And I guess I'm sort of his replacement in this slot. I'd like to think so anyway. So I'd first like to point out that unlike most of the objects that people have been talking about today, our sun actually has a very big corona. So here's a long exposure photograph of it, and it actually extends out millions of kilometers from the surface. So I started as an astronomy major, so I just wanted to point that out. No, I found it on Google. So for me, the first result that's my motivation for looking at this problem is a very classical result in operator theory, usually called the Douglas lemma and sometimes called the range inclusion principle. And it says something very simple. If you have two operators in B of H, A and B, and A majorizes B in this way, then you can always find some contraction that cuts the bigger one down to the smaller one. So from the outset, all you can really say is the contraction is somewhere in B of H, and then if you spend a few minutes thinking about it, you can always find it in the von Neumann algebra generated by A and B. Yes, yeah. So just the weakly closed algebra generated by A and A star and B star. So the question is, given a subalgebra of B of H, when you have that same majorization, when can you take the contraction from your algebra? And so because the von Neumann, or because it can always be taken from the von Neumann algebra generated by A and B, you can always you can see that the von Neumann algebras always have it. However, even the simplest abelian C star algebras don't. Certain classes do, and they are demonstrated by Fialco and Salas in the 70s, and there's certain inductive limit type C star algebras. And in the non-self-adjoint world, Arvidsson demonstrated an example of a nest algebra, which fails to have the property. And for H-infinity acting on the Hardy space, they actually do, and it's a quick argument which follows from the Nevelin-Epik interpolation theorem. So Tavon already mentioned this, what I think is a really interesting result. If you take a reproducing kernel Hilbert space and you tensor it with B of some other Hilbert space, I just called it L, then it has this factorization property if and only if you have the complete pick property on your space. And so one direction is sort of follows readily from the Nevelin-Epik theorem, but the reverse direction is really the interesting part of that. And it also tells us that there are lots of kernels out there which fail to have this property. So many Bergmann spaces and the Hardy spaces of the polydisk and ball, at least when you tensor with B of H. So this is at least one strong suggestion that the Toeplitz-Corona theorem probably fails for most of these spaces as well. So the Toeplitz-Corona theorem for H infinity was first stated by Arvidsson in 75. And so his idea was to try to take the corona problem and restate it in terms of operator theory with the hopes of finding perhaps a shorter or simpler solution. So what he ended up doing is he determined that you have to replace the corona condition with this stronger operator inequality. And under that stronger assumption, he was able to solve the zoo equation. And Schubert came along a few years later and used a very quick application of the Nagy-Foyash-commutant lifting theorem to get the best possible norm on your solution. So I think Arvidsson's norm was something like 4n squared c to the minus 3. Maybe the 2 and the 3 are flipped. So this was at least quite a bit better than the best estimates for the classical corona problem at the time. And so Arvidsson settled with that and was never able to solve the initial problem. So what's interesting is that to solve it for the analytic Toeplitz algebra, he first tried it for nest algebras. and quickly realized that it doesn't work. So if you don't know what a nest algebra is, the simplest type is you just take a sequence of projections that are increasing strongly to the identity and take the weak closure of that thing, so it's just upper block triangular operators. And so the Toeplitz-Corona theorem in this case is you have to replace one condition with a family of conditions, one for each of your projections. And when you have all of those operator inequalities holding, then you can solve the Bézier equation. And I don't have the norm for what he did there, but I think it was similar to the Toeplitz-Corona norm. So as far as I know, this is the first appearance of a Toeplitz-Corona problem where you have a family appearing. And then Abrahams had his interpolation theorem for multiply connected regions a few years later, which was, I guess, the first classical appearance of families. So where I came into this problem is I saw Murnau gave a talk in Banff a few years ago, and it was a similar sort of idea. So he became very interested in H-infinity of a finite open Riemann surface, and by using the universal cover for that surface, the disk, you can identify that algebra with certain subalgebras of H-infinity. So if you want to ask things like Nevelin-Apick interpolation or the Toeplitz-Corona problem, you can appeal to this identification and look at subalgebras of H-infinity. So you know that if you have the Toeplitz-Corona condition satisfied for the subalgebra, then you can find solutions to the Bézier equation in H-infinity, but of course, why should they belong to the smaller algebra? So their condition is, not only do you need the original condition satisfied, but it must be satisfied for every subspace generated by the algebra and an outer function. And of course, when the algebra is the whole thing, this contracts just to the one condition, because you get all of H2 back. And their method yields the best possible norm on the solution as well. So today I'd like to present a method that sort of handles the subalgebra problem and more exotic examples simultaneously. And it's basically an operator theoretic approach. And a lot of the hard work that led to this approach was done years ago. So I'll briefly explain that stuff. I'd also like to mention the result for the polydisk and ball. So first it was done by Amar. And again, a family is required, and I believe Amar did it where you need all absolutely continuous measures. And then Trent Wick reduced that to measures that look like that, and you can actually take that F to be non-vanishing and bounded away on the boundary. So these are sort of the motivating results that got me interested. So just a little bit abstract nonsense for two slides. So I'll start with a vector-valued reproducing kernel Hilbert space. So we've seen these a few times now. And it's simply a Hilbert space of functions which take on values in some other Hilbert space. And you demand that point evaluation be bounded from H into L. And to each space, you can associate a positive definite kernel with values in B of L. And then for scalar-valued spaces, I'll just use lowercase k for the kernel. And when you have two such spaces, I've labeled them 1 and 2, a multiplier is something that pointwise multiplies one into the other. So you just make sure that all your pieces go from the right space into the right space. So your multiplier is a function from x into b, l1, l2, and as an operator, it acts in b of h1, h2. Reproducing kernel Hilbert space. And so we just let M, H1, H2 denote the operator algebra, or sorry, operator space of all of these guys. So in the scalar case, we have all of our familiar examples. So for the ball and polydisk, you have the Hardy space. You can do the Hardy space for other regions as well. And the multipliers are just H infinity. Same with the Bergmann space for arbitrary regions in CN. I'll force them to be bounded for this talk, but that's not necessarily needed. Then there's the Drewy-Arvidsson space, very important for multivariable operator theorists. And it's an interesting example because the multiplier norm there is larger than the soup norm, and the multipliers are a strict subset of H-infinity. And then there's this this classification of all complete Nevelinopic kernels due to Quiggin, McCullough, Agler, and McCarthy that says that any such space has a very natural embedding into Drury-Arvesen space of infinitely many variables. So that's a very important result when dealing with multiplier algebras, which I'll use frequently. So we can state the factorization problem for the multiplier space like so. And so if F majorizes G, you want to find a third multiplier H, which cuts the bigger one down to the small one. And of course, you want that H to itself be a multiplier. And so two facts are very important about these spaces. They're weak star closed, and point evaluation is weak star continuous. And actually, both of these aren't facts. They're both false in general. You can get lots of pathology with this very general definition. But as long as you impose some very mild assumptions, these two things always hold. And so what does that mean? That means you can try to solve the factorization problem locally. So pick your favorite finite subset of X and try to solve it on only the points from X. And hopefully you can solve it with a contraction, say. And then you just take any weak star cluster point of all of those contractions, and that will solve the problem. And more generally, you just need a uniform bound on all those solutions. So any bound will do for the purposes of this talk. Sometimes we get one, sometimes we don't. So going back to a more concrete setting, if you just take all the multipliers from infinitely many copies of H into H for a scalar-valued space, you get the rows of multipliers of H. And similarly, from H into infinitely many copies of H, you get the columns. So then you can state the Toeplitz-Corona problem with a row, like so, in the obvious way. So what I want to do now is just let A be any weakly closed algebra of multipliers on a scalar space. And you want to take a row, it can be infinite, it can be finite, it doesn't really matter, which satisfies the Toeplitz-Corona hypothesis. And again, we want to solve it on finite sets. In a uniformly bounded way. So I can state this in a little bit more generality as more of an interpolation problem. So what I want to do is I want to prescribe my finite set of xi's and n vectors in L2 and n complex numbers. And I want to solve for a column GE, which satisfies that equality I have there. The inner product of GE evaluated at xi and vi is wi bar. And then taking Wi to be our positive constant and Vi to be our row evaluated its adjoint, that will give us what we need. Okay. So like Tavon mentioned, there's this very important property that multipliers have, and the rows satisfy a similar property. So you always get this wonderful equation involving the kernel. And so if you want to determine whether or not a row is a contraction, or in this case, whether or not a row majorizes a constant of the identity, you just have to check it against finite spans of kernels. And you'll see that that inequality holding is equivalent to matrices like this being positive semi-definite. So now it looks a lot like Nevelinopic interpolation. It's an eigenvalue problem. So just to summarize a little bit about what I'm saying here, so you prescribe three sets, one from X, one from little L2, and one from the complex numbers, and you say that a collection of kernels is a tangential family if the simultaneous positivity of all of these pick-like matrices gets you your solution G sub E, which is what I called it previously. So how do we do this? Well, we're going to think of it like a duality problem. So I start with a submodule, a submodule of the column space, and it's all those columns which satisfy the zeroth interpolation problem, that thing right there. So if you take any column, not necessarily contractive, which solves your interpolation problem, so you can always take a column of polynomials, for example, and that will solve it. It might just have bad norm. You can add and subtract any representative you'd like from this submodule, and you'll still get a solution. So the hope is by adding and subtracting all of these guys, maybe you'll eventually reduce the norm to something you can get your hands on. And the norm would exactly be the distance from your arbitrary interpolant to J. So we're measuring the distance, and we know that distance is attained by functionals. So that's the approach that we'll take. First, a little more machinery is needed. If I take any weakly closed algebra of multipliers, an invariant subspace for it is naturally reproducing kernel Hilbert space on X, and its kernel is just the projection of the kernel you started with onto that space. And then by restricting multipliers to that space, you get a new multiplier or multiplication operator that lives on your subspace L. So if I take any cyclic invariant subspace for A, I'm going to form this span of kernels tensored with my data set. Okay, so this is an object that appears in pick interpolation quite frequently. And K superscript L is a tangential family if and only if this distance formula holds. So where does that formula come from? Well, if you take a look at the right-hand side, so remember, we want distance between G and the submodule to be less than 1 or at least less than some fixed constant. So in order for that to hold on the right-hand side, well, it's exactly equivalent to the simultaneous positivity of all of these pick matrices. So what does that give us? If we can find, if the collection of cyclic invariant subspaces for A is a tangential family, this is equivalent to being able to solve the Toeplitz-Corona problem, or at least it implies it. So you just need to impose that majorization for all representatives from your family. Okay, so the question is, which multiplier algebras or subalgebras thereof admits such families? So again, we're measuring distance, which means we want to get a hold of weak star functionals. So what you should maybe think about trying first is take examples of operator algebras that have the best possible weak star continuous functionals. So there is a name for this. So a weakly closed subspace of operators is said to have property A1R if you can factor, or let's say represent, every weak star functional as a vector functional. And the R means that you can get a good handle on the norm of the things that you factor your functional into. It's a contractive functional. So this is a very difficult property to establish, and there are very few examples of operator algebras with this property, with the exception of a few very important ones coming from the 70s and 80s, which just so happened to be algebras of analytic functions. So Scott Brown introduced this property in the late 70s and used it to establish that subnormal operators have invariant subspaces. It's a very, very important result. And later, Berkovich and Conway improved the norm to the best possible. And another thing to mention is that these properties are representation dependent. So just because H infinity acting on Hardy space has this property, it doesn't mean H infinity acting on some other space may have it. But Berkovich proved that, in fact, it's representation free in a sense. So as long as you always have an isometric representation, it inherits this property. And so he used this to prove the best possible invariant subspace result we have to date, which is any contraction with spectrum containing the unit circle has invariant subspaces. BCP operators have it as well. Arias and Popescu showed that the multipliers of Drury-Arvidsson space have it. And as far as I know, it's still open for subnormal tuples. So the main theorem is that if your column space of your algebra of multiplication operators has A1R, then you can solve the Toeplitz-Corona problem with constant R over C. So this wasn't very surprising. Like I said, as soon as you have a distance formula, you first want to try it for spaces with really good functionals. So the proof is quite straightforward. So you write down your distance, and you know that it's approximately achieved by some functional that kills that submodule. And so you factor your functional, and you play around with some algebra and some projections a little bit, and you quickly see that you can get a very nice handle on distance. It's always going to be less than r times this guy. And remember, this thing comes from those pick matrices. So if all of your pick matrices are positive, then that distance, or that that term on the right, is always going to be less than or equal to 1, which means your distance is always going to be less than or equal to r. So you get a nice uniform bound. So now we just need to make sure there are some examples of column spaces with this property. Lots of people establish these properties for algebras, but column spaces are quite a bit more delicate. So the first example we have is that if you take any algebra of multiplication operators acting on any complete pick space, then you always get A11. So we were able to generalize the Ragopathy-Wick result to any subalgebra of a complete Nevelina pick spaces multiplication operators. And that's what this is here. So we get the best possible norm there as well. Of course, when it's the full multiplier algebra of a complete pick space, this is the Baltrent-Vinnikov result from the early 2000s, where they develop a commutant lifting theorem for these multiplier algebras. And lastly, I'd just like to mention a few additional examples that I've come across since. So Berkovich proved pretty much all of the really important results surrounding these factorization properties. So there's about 20 papers from the 80s that you have to dig through. But in 87, he actually proved that the multiplier algebras of any Bergman space have a property that's actually much stronger than A11. So it's called X01, and I won't give you the definition, but it says that not only do you have A11, but you can find a sequence of vectors that your functional factors into, and those vectors are almost are eventually orthogonal to everything else in your Hilbert space. So it's a very strong condition. And so some very trivial and very crude estimates let you see that you can at least get the column space having A1 root n when your columns are length n. So I think if I tried a little bit harder, you could probably get that root n to 1, and then you could just take infinite columns. But I haven't been able to prove that yet. So you get a Toeplitz-Corona theorem for h infinity of any bounded open region, or any subalgebra of it, in terms of these cyclic invariant subspaces. And recently, Prunaro's improved Berkovich's result after seeing some of this stuff. He emailed me to let me know. So if you take any reproducing kernel Hilbert space that it's that's coming from a measure, basically, then you always get this X01 property I was just talking about, which means you always crudely get this A1 root n. So it applies to weighted Bergman spaces as well, and I'm sure many, many others. I think if you finagled it enough, maybe you could get the Besov-Sobolev class as well. Yes. Yeah. It's the end of the day, and that's all I have, so I'll finish there. Thank you. And any open set, so long as h infinity of that open set actually has stuff in it. So, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
The A1 stuff, if you apply to the Bergman space, if you get it, you don't get Toeplitz-Corona for the Bergman space, right? But you get Toeplitz-Corona for the whole family of subspaces.
Yes, you always need the family. Yeah.
No, it's on now. So it's quite loud.
Okay. Yeah, I just thought I'd be able to control it from...
Oh, don't worry about that. Yeah, I don't think that's...